some yes, a mantle of power thrown over the right shoulder. So everyone, right, the descent of powerful energies, heeding the call, and we go, oh, that's really great. Yeah, exactly. Imaginary mantle and cape-like flair. And I love the etymology of escape. It just means to leave your cape behind. It's so darling. So here we are. And we remember that the word salam, peace, in the Middle East is not the absence of conflict, but the presence of oneness. And so I thought also for our musical intro, you know, sea shanties. Sea shanties are great because you're pulling together. So let's begin with the Wellerman Cat sea shanty. Let's begin with, oh, there we go.
There once was a ship that put to sea. The name of the ship was a Bully of Tea. The winds blew up her bow, up down, oh, below my bully boys blow. Soon may the Wellerman come to bring us sugar and tea and rum. One day when the tonguing is done, we'll take our leave and go. She'd not been 2 weeks from shore when down on her a right whale bore. The captain called all hands and swore he'd take that whale in tow. Soon may the Wellerman come to bring us sugar and tea and rum. One day when the tonguing is done, we'll take our leave and go. Da 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 da. Before the boat had hit the water, the whale's sail came up and caught her. Hands to the side, harping and fought her when she dived down low. Soon may the Wellerman come to bring us sugar and tea and rum. One day when the tonguing is done, we'll take our leave and go. No line was cut, no whale was freed. The captain's mind was not of greed, and he belonged to the whaleman's creed. She took that ship in tow. Soon may the Wellerman come to bring us sugar and tea and rum. One day when the tonguing is done, we'll take our leave and go. Da 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 da. For 40 days or even more, the line went slack, then tight once more. All boats were lost, there were only four, but still that whale did go. Soon may the Wellerman come to bring us sugar and tea and rum. One day when the tonguing is done, we'll take our leave and go. As far as I've heard, the fight's still on. The line's not cut and the whale's not gone. The Wellerman makes his regular call to encourage the captain, crew and all. Soon may the Wellerman come to bring us sugar and tea and rum. One day when the tonguing is done, we'll take our leave and go. Soon may the Wellerman come to bring us sugar and tea and rum. One day when the tonguing is done, we'll take our leave and go.
So charming. And feel free, you know, and not self-conscious, or turn off your camera if you are, whatever, to participate, you know, and undulate. This is a watery dream council, and we'll be honoring water in many ways. But we know that, you know, we want not a violent impact. We want an undulating long-term influence, right? And we know that the sky rivers and the sea rivers are stalling due to human bad manners, right? So they've lost their capacity to undulate, right? So just in the participatory physics of everything, the micro to the macro, we're all encouraged to undulate. So it's a great team here in the fullness of our unfolding. You know, maybe we can all introduce ourselves, because we're all, our metaphor is, I'm the Caroline Casey part of all of you, and you're the Dream Council part. We're all in this mix together. And I want to, excuse me, do an homage to my dream mentor, Donna Graham, who died this spring. because it was she years ago who had a little dream group. And there are many ways of working with dreams, but she was such a good genius. People would tell their dream, and I think we're all going to have interesting dreams. And nobody was supposed to interpret it else. Nobody else was supposed to interpret it. And then she would just guide them gently to tell the dream in which everything in the dream was them. And just a little example that I remember, you know, somebody would say, I dreamt I had a conversation with a friend on the street outside my house. And she, Donna, would ask, well, when's the last time you spoke with that friend? And they'd go, oh, 20 years ago. So then she would guide them to say, I dreamt I spoke with a part of myself I hadn't spoken to in 20 years. And you could see people going into a deep place like, oh, ooh. The woman who dreamt about the tornado, it took her a while to say, I dreamt about the swirling, violent parts of myself. But when she did, the whole room relaxed like this. So I loved that and right away just teased it into everything and into the news. You know, it's all us is one frame. There's always many, you know, we dreamt. And that's what we'll be playing with in this council. You know, and as Reverend Ike says, if we can dream it up, we can dream it down. Neptune says, solve a coagula, dissolve and reimagine. Dissolution is the secret of the great work. So we want to look at good stories and terrible stories and everything, but in a participatory way. And this beautiful language of astrology, really what it wants to get us to do is to remember to be intimate with the world by being able to read it symbolically. Everything real, everything symbolic. So as I'm very moved apparently, but so as many of you have had readings or know your charts or are astrologers or whatever, or not, you know, everything welcome. But the astrological chart is just a stylized factual map. We'll look at ours for tonight. And we just say real map, symbolic map, you know, of navigating autonomy. And this crucial linguistic concept we'll bring in and take with us all the time. The word disaster, we'll look at some, means against the stars. And the word consider means with the stars. So we gather to consider in our dream news council in order to avert further disaster. And I'm delighted to cahoot with everybody. And it's one of those things that once you start brewing or humming a certain theme, then life sort of presents a curriculum, you know, and what's going on in medium popular culture. And I did see, this isn't necessarily for everyone, but it grabbed me. A friend was visiting I dreamt a young poet, part of myself, came to visit, right, and talked to festivals. And we were talking about entheogens and psilocybin mushrooms and stuff. And he said, well, have you seen the Nicole Kidman series, Nine Perfect Strangers? I'm like, no. So then I watched it. Eight episodes in a row, because I'm like that, right? And then I was talking it up to somebody else the other day, and I talked myself into rewatching it. So again, it's not for everybody, but it is this theme now. So many people interested in the power of imagination and multiple universes, and you know, and then because then I went on to read this book. I'm reading this novel called The Observer, written by important physicist. I put it in your notes. Here it is. It's called The Observer by physicist Robert Lanza and Nancy Kress, novelist. And it also is about, you know, brain surgery that allows people to enter into other realities where people they love who had died are there. So in Nine Perfect Strangers, it's about entheotherapy. It's Nicole Kidman is just amazing. The acting is amazing. And so she runs a spa, right? And we're not going to be doing what she did. And she's picked nine people who don't know each other to come. there are, it's not my idea. And then unbeknownst to them, there's some sketchy ethical things. She starts dosing them with psilocybin. Right. And so that's ethically sketchy. But then just I won't go on further much, except there's some ethically sketchy things. And then there's some powerful redemptive magic, like just amazing. And the most compelling, responsible staging of talking to a beloved dead person who died tragically, just really good anyway. So I just put that there. So in our reading the news mythologically, so it's the something anniversary of the New Horizons rocket arriving on Pluto. And that was also because I watched these things, right? So it was so mythological, New Horizons. It took 9 years for the rocket to get there, 9 steps to the underworld. It was mostly women who were part of the NASA team. And, you know, when they were typing, they're going, oh, it's going to be the loneliest little rocket in the world. It's got to thread this dangerous needle between Pluto and its largest moon, Charon, the underworld boatman. And we're going to lose contact with it. But we put a coin on the New Horizons rocket so it could pay Charon, the ferryman, for safe passage. And then it does this bold thing, and NASA goes, it worked. It worked. So science and mythology, you know, decoding all those things. And then some of you have been with me so long, I may say some things that you have heard before. I dreamt the Caroline Casey part of myself, repeated some things, you know, anyway. So, but something I carried with me forever and told too many times, but haven't told in a while. So a spiritual teacher had long been estranged from her adult son. Like, they weren't talking for years. And at certain point, she was just had it. She just had it. And she was like, okay, send me a dream. Send me a dream. And she had an amazing dream in which she saw her son with an octopus wrapped around his heart. She was like, whoa. So she woke up and she didn't go into therapy. And she did what we're going to be doing. She imagined in waking reverie, shape-shifting into a dolphin that swam and butted gently against the octopus that was wrapped around her son's heart, and it swam away. And then, out of her reverie, an hour later, her son called and said, this is so silly, let's talk. You know. So I just want to believe nothing, entertain the possibility that we move into this realm of Neptune, dreams, vision, imagination, illusion and delusion. Illusion comes from in ludo, in the game, and delusion comes from de ludo, out of the game. And we want to be tuning ourselves to that. So I love that. It's just something that's part of our setting forth. And then, you know, in my own circumstance, you know, I was heading into a daunting thing, underworld medical treatment, you know, heading into chemo. And a couple of days before, my cat brought a living copperhead snake into the house. I'm like, what are you playing with, kitty? Like, whoa, I love snakes as symbols, but there's the real thing. Like, and so remove the cat, and I talk to the snake going, nobody needs to get hurt here. And I open the high up window and go, good luck. All right. And a friend mythologically attuned said, well, isn't that a great dream image? The venomous snake came into your house, but did not harm you or your cat. I'm like, it's going to be okay. Snake medicine. That's all right. So this call and response kind of augury is part of a field we want to move into. And then all of us really as a council, because, you know, I bring before you the challenge of how to make something a council so that it feels easy and easier in our 5 weeks together for people to chime in. And the reason I said, let's all keep dream journals is, when we pay attention to dreams, they really perk up. And it's been a while, right? I was in Jungian analysis with a wonderful rascal heretic very long time ago. I still have those dream journals, though, because in Jungian analysis, it's like the dream world. So you want Jungian dreams? Here you go. I've never had such dreams. And I think that that's also part of what we're brewing, the availability, and part of my own desire. And we can think of, you know, things we might want to change, you know, in our lives. And the new moon in Cancer behind us is, how shall we, you know, nourish ourselves and, you know, and tend and take care. And it's the new moon in Cancer, which is incarnational realm of Big Mama and Yamaya. I'm a daughter of Yamaya, as Big Mama in the ocean. And the chant, you know, Kai 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 Yamaya Halodo. Kai means how wonderful, how wonderful. My mother is a mother in the ocean. My mother's house is in the sea. My mother is an anchor in the storm. We go, oh, well, let's keep that too. And that feeling of safety. And it is also very Brer Rabbit, right? We use Brer Rabbit as our incantation. There was times when all the critters used to gather to sagacuate. Just like there ain't been no hard times, like there ain't been no falling out, like they all remembered they were kin. Kinship, kinship. That's part of our dynamic. So yes. So I think, just medium briefly, I want to take us on a tour of now astrologically, and how much this council, this gathering, wanted to happen, right? We look for you know, auguries, a call and response, so that we're in conversation. And whatever language we cultivate, whatever it is, for me, I love astrology and all the symbolic languages of, you know, tarot and etymology and everything. So whatever it is we love is how liberating synchronicity will speak to us in a heartening way. It's like, oh, so let me just bring up our chart for now. And then I'm going to throw some things into the thing. So, so all that this is, it's live action. It's the chart of now. Here's me. This is the Earth. This is the horizon line. And as we know in astrology, the way we draw it, on the left is east, on the right is west, because we're looking down. So the moon has just set. For those of you on the West Coast, after we deconvene, you get a fantastic thing. If it's not too smoky or cloudy or otherwise, whatever, in the West, after sunset, you will see the Moon, Mercury, Venus, and Mars. And we'll honor those. Venus, every night, will be getting lower and lower. She's preparing to descend into the underworld of invisibility, you know, by the end of this month, and she'll spend some time invisible. And then, according to our latitude, she will reemerge as the morning star. But so when we began, or were scheduled to begin, close enough, the midheaven was 26 Scorpio, forming what's called a grand trine in water, Sun in Cancer, Big Mama, trine Neptune, dreams, vision, imagination. It's stationing. It looks like it's standing still, trining our midheaven. And then I was just, you know, all of us have different curiosities, curiosity and wonder. So I look at the news and look up charts and things, and you can do that and also suggest things that cross your, like, what's going on with this news story or what's this person, but also fully honoring there's at least one and maybe more part of our team who go, I never watch the news. I don't pay any attention to that. And, you know, it's like, thank you. You are the part of us, all of us, who is not watching the news. That's great. But it all comes to us through the dreams, and everybody's got their role. You know, Uranus Trickster says to all of us, you know, we are big beings. Intelligence is dancing with you. We don't care what you do. We care the manner in which you do it, that it come from freedom and choice as opposed to fear. And then whatever you choose to do is going to fly. So just to point a few intriguing things out for fun, and then we'll play with them and bring them alive. But I want to run them through history as well. So here's Venus at her stationing degree. She's going to retrograde on July 22nd, begin begin going backwards, 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 lower and lower in the sky. It's always poignant when Venus disappears. All cultures have watched this, the Venus cycle, because it's so clear and it's been important in all cultures. Different myths, different dreams attached. You know, in the West, in the Middle East, it's the Inanna cycle. Venus as the star of peace, and then she disappears into the underworld to gather creative woof for a stage of cultural renaissance when she reemerges as the morning star, which will be in August, medium late August or September, according to our latitude. But I always love it. And the things I want to change in my own life is like going to bed so late. But I go, but at the beach, I always get up at dawn because it's like so exciting. And I never watch TV. And it's, you know, and I go to sleep early because the heliacal rise is a wonderful thing. In Mesoamerica, Venus is a guy, Quetzalcoatl. And the story is told that he's a pretty good leader. But then Tezcatlipoca, the Lord of the Smoking Mirror, comes to him and says, "You're getting old, you know, here, drink this balche, drink this power intoxicant. You'll feel better." Right? So he does. So Quetzalcoatl drinks it and does terrible things and makes deals with corporations and forgets all his values and apparently sleeps with his daughter. Just everything. And wakes up in the morning going, "Whoa, I must go away." Venus disappears, Quetzalcoatl disappears, and the culture would know it's like time for everyone to go away to reinvent ethical leadership. And then at the heliacal rise, when Venus, Quetzalcoatl, returns from the underworld, you know, it's meant to be like, wise leadership is returning. In a terrible twist of historic fate, on that day is when Cortez shows up. And this is part of the theme that we're working with. They mistake the mortal man for the myth. And this is part of our deal here. It's always a mistake to mistake mortal man for the myth. It's meant to be wise leadership returning to everyone, not a person, right? And that's part of our dynamic now, which is when I was covering the Republican convention in 2016 as the mythological news for Pacifica, right? It was the same thing. It was the heliacal rise of Venus. And even though nobody there would have known the Venus cycle or the myths, it lives in us, even if we don't know them. And if we don't know them, we're even more possessed by the unconscious part of them. And so it's the heliacal rise of Venus, and the humans mistook the former guy for Quetzalcoatl. It's you know, so there's that dynamic. So just to point out some of our mythological backup, I love, you know, who's here and these qualities in everyone. The moon is at such a wonderful degree. There are metaphors for each degree of the zodiac. This is children swinging underneath the shade of a huge oak tree, the borrowed strength of all animistic traditions reaching far back into the past. We go, yes, that's what we want. You know, creative participation, you know, and I love that one. And then we have Venus in beginning her descent. And when she descends as Inanna, this is in keeping with her quirky relationship to Pluto, 150 degree angle to Pluto, 150 degree angle to Neptune, little 60 degree between. This is what's called a yod or a finger of destiny. It's connecting quite different things. It's the Leo Pisces conversation. See, we just changed. Mercury just set, which is, it's not performance. It's deep mythological participatory magic. And it's practical, right? And so when she descends into the underworld, it's a Pluto transit. She takes off everything that from which she has derived her identity. She takes off her cloak. She escapes from her cloak. She takes off her ring. She takes off all her business cards and descends, you know, into the underworld. And when she returns, she or he returns, then at each Venus moon conjunction, she receives back what she'd given up on a truer level. This is the releasing of conditioning, the releasing of conditioning, the releasing of past things, all kinds of stuff. Solve a coagula. So it's this beautiful dance between Neptune dreams, vision, here we are, you know, and Pluto at the most competent degree of the zodiac. It's really organizationally competent. Richard has something there. We're going to get you to believe in this. It's super competent. So it's like, this is absolutely real, more real and molecular than anything. And this is idealism and dreams, and they're in creative combination. We say some things are always true, but there are times when they're truer. And it's like dreams are eager to incarnate into actual structure and actual structures of how we gather and governance and all kinds of cool things. Then just a little bit more here. And also, I think the chat is open as well. I haven't looked at it, but you can type in questions. You can also raise your hand and comment, and we'll create an atmosphere where that becomes fluid and fun in the full unfolding here. There's no air. Each planet, each sign is called fire, earth, air, or water. We have three fire, four earth, no air, three water. So it's up to us to breathe and bring in levity. But it is fire, earth, water. It's fire. It's kind of great. Fire bakes the earth into a vessel which can hold water. And as those of you who were with me in the last council, Plants and Planets, and maybe before, I'm so in love with the fact that the word vessel in all languages means container, alchemical vessel, are what we're crafting here, and boat, right? So I love that. So we craft our vessel, our alchemical vessel, and then we get in and set forth. Oh, it's really wonderful. And the same thing, the word craft is also wonderful. Craft means power from dedication. Whatever each one of us has as a way of being creative and expressive, to outwardly express dreams, to outwardly express deep things, gives us the power of that insight. So that's part of that fun dance. So I was looking at the Titanic and the implosion of the Titan going, oh, because we have exact times for them. So I'm going to put the Titanic iceberg in the center here. Right. So why this fascination in the public dream world with this? What is this? We wonder. And so what we have here is the inner rim is where the planets were when the Titanic hit the ice. And the outer rim is where all the planets are now. And so events and people, and even people who have died, still respond to transits, to where are the planets now. And so there's a kind of fixation. But the one part I just want to draw our attention to, and I know it might look confusing to some, but just let it wash over you. We noticed that when that happened, Pluto, death, rebirth, was at 27 degrees of Gemini, and the moon was at 27 degrees of Pisces. Just, they're squared, exactly squared. And it's like listening to the sea, listening to the sea. You know, to avert disaster, we consider, you know, in almost all, well, in many, many, many huge disasters, the idea is that nothing is really sudden. That's a compelling illusion. You know, the coal miners in, I think, Chile, you know, who were rescued after 6 months, but they were like, the mountain was speaking to us. The mountain was speaking to us for months before the collapse. You know, and so we're extracting from all of these things, heeding the call, listening. There's some poignant things. There's a grand trine in water, like today. Neptune trines the midheaven trines the moon. And grand trines, 120 degree angles, the medievals were always wary of those. In modern astrology, it's like, oh, how lucky. It's like, No, they're like greased lightning. If one is cultivated, then it's like wudba. But if not, then one is possessed. And we go, oh. So the Sabian symbol, there's a dark humor to astrology. The Sabian symbol for Pluto at 27 Gemini was bankruptcy granted to him, a wealthy man leaves the court. And it's like, well, it's a kind of cavalier way of expressing death, right? And the moon is at 27 Pisces, which is the powerful forces of nature. And it's like a square, a 90 degree angle, wants, is an illusory estrangement that wants to come back into conversation, call and response. And we know in the Titanic that the captain was told, ice fields ahead, it's the dark of the moon, there is no visible moon, nothing's visible except for Jupiter overhead, you know. And he was like, no, never mind, we're fine, full steam ahead, I'm going to bed. That's what happened. So now we're going to change. Well, there's one more thing I want to kind of bring up here. I love quintiles. I love 72 degree angles, right? And other astrologers, well, my friend Sylvia is always trying to go, they can be bad too, everything, right? It behooves us to discern the liveliest possibilities at any time and align with that and animate it, lest we leave it by default to the Dementors. We're going to see everywhere, like in this and in the migrants drowning and in the Titan explosion, you know, there was an abdication and outsourcing of authority to somebody incompetent. Right? Because the people around the captain are like, I don't think so. I don't. Oh, okay. He's the captain. Oh, bad idea. So there is a quintile. And then now we go back to that's us. And then now let's look at the Titan implosion, which we have a time for, unfortunately or fortunately. So the Titan, now we say, oh, look, the sun was at 27 Gemini. Remember, Pluto was at 27 Gemini. Neptune's at 27 Pisces. The moon in the Titanic was at 27 Pisces. Well, to me, that was like humming, resonant, like, oh, my goodness, like, whoa. And in the, and this also was, you know, full of huge poignancies on many, many levels. We noted the discrepancy of the world fixated futilely because they died on Monday, but for days, you know, on these five people. At the same time, you know, the migrants' ship was going down off the coast of Greece. And bodies were washing up on the shores of Greece, close to the ruins of the ancient Asclepions. So for me, it says the modern world's cruelty is washing up on the shores of the ruins of what could heal it. And so part of what we're up to here, we know that, you know, out here in the sky, and Chiron is stationing, here's Chiron, little planetary being, and it doesn't move that fast. So the myth of Chiron, which many of you may know. So Chiron, not so much the wounded healer. He could heal where he'd been wounded, but he never talked about it. Never complained. We get to accumulate things also that we want to put into the cauldron of dissolving. And I think complaining would be fun to just put into the... So Chiron is the first mentor 2,500 years ago. He's a centaur mentor and important. He starts a school for future cultural heroes, right? And see, all of these old things want to come alive. They're in us. And when we give expression to them or make ourselves available, we go through curiosity and wonder, there we have dance partners. So he starts a school for future cultural heroes. And their tasks are impossible, and they always succeed after they study with Chiron. So he teaches Asclepius how to be the Greek god of healing. He teaches Orpheus how to play the lute. healing and music and art one thing? You know, Neptune again, our word to dream comes from an old English word, dreamon, which meant two things, to dream and to make music, reminding us that making music is a way of dreaming the world into being. And we go, okay. So the part of the, so in Chiron's mythology, since you're going to do an impossible thing, it's considered a positive strategic advantage to be underestimated. And I love that, to dissolve our grievance. You know, when people say, those people don't respect me, they don't know who I really am, they won't let me in their club. You know, in Chiron's frame, we go, how excellent, how fortunate for you. You get into Chiron's school, right? You know, again, it's the banner, go ahead, underestimate me, that'll be fun. So that's a wonderful dissolving of like, oh, whaley, whaley. And we go, no, no, you think it's a prison, it's actually a freedom. Swirl, undulate with us. And then we come around to Chiron and Ceres are the two mythological figures who found initiatory human ritual theater. Like parts of us say, didn't humans have ways of navigating not knowing? And we got, yes, they did. So Chiron found the Asclepions throughout the Mediterranean. I've been to the ruins of the one on the island of Kos. Astrology was first taught there. And these were places of dream incubation, healing, and theater. It's very happening in our chart. And so people would go there at a time like, oh, what do I do? Or a real issue in their personal or social life. And they would dedicate, this is all very happening now, they would dedicate to having a healing dream for themselves and their community, right? Self and community, micro, macro, connected. And they'd have one because we have records. And then here comes our chart again. It was common sense, cultural knowledge at the time that they would only have the power of their dream once they gave it outward creative expression. Here's our Venus Leo, outward creative expression of this inner invisible thing. And having done that, they'd have the power of their dream and they'd go back to their communities as seed Renaissance people. So that all really happened, right? And that's part of our kind of frame going without hubris or presumption, but we go, all right, the Asclepions want to come back. They can look like a Zoom session. They don't, you know, there's these little fabrics around. But so for me, again, the migrants were washing up on the shores of the Asclepions, of what could heal it, you know, and heal kinship. We do not lose kinship with the five or the 500 or 650 migrants who drowned, both. And in the same thing with the Titan, here's the Titan, with lots of quintiles, right? Again, I think of them as wonderful. Well, when I was talking to my friend Sylvia, I go, I love quintiles, 72 degree angles. They are irresistible eloquence. And also the capacity, and Sylvia said also the capacity to open portals between worlds. I go, cool. And I go, but I noticed that they're in the charts also of people who do terrible things or terrible events. And she goes, opening portals for good or for ill. So in this, the moon, wait a minute, here's the moon. It just entered zero Cancer, how poignant. The moon quintiles Chiron going, oh, the healing Asclepion, you know, and Neptune says, about everything, is this the thing or the symbol of the thing? You think you want to go deep in a dangerous carbon fiber creaking submarine, but what is it you really want? What is it you really want? You know, and I'll be inviting us to rewrite the news too. You know, because the Pakistani billionaire and his son, he talked his son into coming with him on Father's Day, not outsourcing authority, even to your father on Father's Day, right? And his sister was talking about how the son really didn't want to go. It's like, right. she said she hadn't been in touch with her brother because since she'd gotten Parkinson's, she was enthusiastically using cannabis, and her brother died, who was part of a major funder of SETI, the search for extraterrestrial. Everything's speaking to us. But so her brother wouldn't talk to her because she was smoking cannabis. My rewrite is the father to say to the son, "Oh, my beloved son, it would be so meaningful to me if you would smoke a giant spliff with me on Father's Day and we could consider how we might use our vast wealth for collective good." That's my rewrite. But I just want to invite us all as we cruise along through the week or the news or even the dream news or the news in the woods outside your house to be able to play. We'll be putting up resources. So Mercury quintiled Neptune. All right, well, it opened a portal that did. It's the portal that leaked. But again, heeding the call. And for all of us, you know, I have a buddy and a frequent radio guest, Dave Gallo, who's part of that deep sea community that's really knowledgeable, along with James Cameron. And his best friend was on the Titan. and his best friend knew more about submarines than anybody, and knew more about the Titanic than anybody, and had been down many, many times on substantial submarines. And he was like, "Well, what the hell?" Anyway, so we're heeding the call. Many warnings, heeding the call. Okay, so there be that. All right. And if anybody has any, let me turn on the chat if anybody's chatting. Whoops, where'd the chat go? Oh, there we go. So if anybody has any questions or comments, or could we talk about something else, or anything, you're welcome to type or to raise your hand as we go. And Saturn quintiled Uranus. See, when I see the quintiles, certainly in somebody's chart, right, I go, "Oh, how wonderful, you know, open the conversation, you know." When terrible things have happened, we go, more conversing, more reflection, micro to macro, more compassion for everyone. So there. And so I love another shanty for fun, because here we are, you know, on our initial convening, crafting our vessels, right? And then our alchemical vessels and our boat. And it's really useful. Everything meant as an encouraging suggestion, right? No rules, but guidelines and encouragement to craft our boat, to draw the boat, to make an interesting little altar, you know, of one's vessel and one's vessel of dedicated desire. You know, what are we, each one of us, dedicated to? Because then we set sail in that. Every time we meet, we're going to set sail and craft and then set sail and waft blessings into world, all suggested, you know, participatory to and fro. But so it's really a useful and beautiful thing. So I love that our next shanty is the last shanty, and we're bringing in mentors and camaraderie. We'll see, our little boats might need help and improving. So here we go, the last shanty.
Well, me father often told me when I was just a lad, a sailor's life is very hard, the food is always bad. But now I've joined the Navy, I'm aboard a man of war, and now I find a sailor ain't a sailor anymore. Don't haul on the rope and don't climb up the mast, and if you see a sailing ship, it mightn't be your last. Just get your civvies ready for another on a shore. A sailor ain't the sailor, ain't the sailor anymore. Well, the killer of our mess, he says we had it soft, it wasn't like that in his day when we were up aloft. We like our bunks and sleeping bags, but what's a hammock for? And swinging from the deckhead, a lying on the floor. Don't haul on the rope and don't climb up the mast, and if you see a sailing ship, it mightn't be your last. Just get your civvies ready for another on a shore. A sailor ain't the sailor, ain't the sailor anymore. They gave us an engine and first went up and down, And then with more technology, the engine went around. We know our steam and diesels, but what's a main yard for? A stoker ain't a stoker with a shovel anymore. Don't haul on the rope and don't climb up the mast. And if you see a sailing ship, it mightn't be your last. Just get your civvies ready for another run ashore. A sailor ain't the sailor, ain't the sailor anymore. And two cans of beer a day, and that's your bleeding lot. And now I've got an extra one because they stopped the thought. So we'll put on a civvy clothes and find a pub ashore. A sailor's just a sailor, just like he was before. Don't haul on the rope and don't climb up the mast. And if you see a sailing ship, it mightn't be your last. Just get your civvies ready for another run ashore. A sailor ain't a sailor, ain't a sailor anymore. Don't haul on the rope and don't climb up the mast. And if you see a sailing ship, it mightn't be your last. Just get your civvies ready for another run ashore. A sailor ain't a sailor, ain't a sailor anymore.
It's also very charming. It's also very charming. Yes, thank you, Suzanne. Rousing. It's rousing. I think it's poignant. Like, we might have arrived here with our boats a little leaky, you know, with a little in need of repair. It might have been challenging just to get here, right? Just to get through, you know, as the Bengtsons say, you know, here from the whole Big Bang, and just to have gotten through last week, just to get here. So our boats might be a little leaky. But there's the quintessential kind of mentor captain, beard, pipe, you know, extending a hand, right? So all of these images for all of us. And while that jaunty tune was unfolding, I was burning mugwort telepathically for all of us. So the essence of ritual magic, right? Not superstition, just participatory kinship. You know, we do things with intention, and the wonderful word deliberate, which is a very Saturn word. It comes from Libra, and deliberate comes from two verbs, librare, to liberate, and libare, to balance. So to be deliberate is to be in a state of liberating balance, and we want to bring in our trickster selves there. So mugwort, you know, all praise to my colleague from Plants and Planets, Sean Patrick O'Donohue, who's off to a festival that's a wonderful thing right now. But we were doing plants. And so mugwort is sacred all over the world, especially around the time of summer solstice. And its qualities are about border protection and dreaming. Mugwort, yes, I'll get to that, Sandra. It looks completely great. The Titans were the old gods. Thank you. Sinking down to the bottom of the ocean, the deep unconscious, I can't help myself. They were held under guard by Tartarus at the bottom of the sea, the billionaires, the corporate Titans, an old world dying. Well done. Well done, Sandra. That's great. Oh, Victoria has raised her hand. That's fun, too. Oh, yes. Can we unmute Victoria? Hello? Yes, there you go.
Hi. This isn't really that cosmic, but about a month ago, I went to a local thrift store and I got this. It was really inexpensive. And I went online because I don't know how to play it. It's a 20 button Anglo style. I found my teacher online, and the first song that he was teaching me, and this is just yesterday, was the first song you played, Wellerman.
Yeah, Wellerman. Oh, that's great.
Yeah, so I haven't mastered it yet, but it's just so funny that it was the first song you played us. And
truly, you know, wonderful. And you have an accordion. That's so great. And now just you need a cat to keep rhythm. Right. That's super, super charming. Right. Yes. No, that's
my name's not Victoria. My name's not Victoria.
I know. I can see
it's
that.
My now. Wife's computer.
Right, right. So what is your real name, you rascal?
My name is Doc. I go by Dr. Mozzarelli.
Oh, Doc. Wait, oh, I know you. Don't I know you?
I've been listening to you for years. You've influenced so much that I do. And I'm, you know, coyote, trickster, all that. So thank you.
Thank you. That's right, Doc.
Nice to finally see you.
Yes. Disguised as Victoria. That's right. Okay, that's good. Yeah, so we dreamed. That's very like you. Oh, that's good too. You're already fun. Right. Ulysses was disguised as a woman. Right. There we go. So it's all working, disguised as Victoria. And that reminds me of the coyote too, that I can't remember if I already told you this. It's very Neptune spacey. And I must say, I stayed up very late last night. It's like before a journey, sleep deprivation is one of the kind of early kind of like, whoa, okay, there we go. Synchronicity storms, right? That's great. So my friend that I had not heard, I dreamt, and it's also real, a friend I had not heard from in a long time, you know, wanted to do have a reading and everything, a wonderful, wonderful woman who does immeasurable good on the part of plants and indigenous people. I mean, just really substantial and seeds person. But anyway, she said, so I'm sending you, you know, a check, and I'm also sending you this t-shirt that Margot St. James gave to me, she said. And it's my new favorite shirt, because Coyote was the name of her organization, Margot St. James's organization, Call Off Your Old Tired Ethics. It was women sex workers in Las Vegas, right? And so it's like very wonderful. And I don't know if you can see it, but the back says, and the important thing is not to get caught. The important thing is not to get caught. So that's super charming. So Mugwort, how clever of it to be about boundaries and protection. And again, it was especially sacred in the Ukraine. There's a whole way we could go on that, fairy tales and things in the fullness of time. But it protects borders. And at solstice time, people would burn mugwort. I just burned some, but all over the world, really, but especially in the Slavic nations. And then you would put it around your house to keep your house safe, and you would set your boundaries, maybe even your country boundaries, with mugwort. And then it's famous and for real with inducing dreaming. People make mugwort pillows and just go. So it's safety, protection, and dreaming. It's very Saturn and Pisces now. So it's wonderful. It's safe enough to dream. And may that be for all of us. And then also with the mugwort, I also have calamus, which is the capacity to speak truthfully in a liberating, relaxed manner. So may that be part of the atmosphere we're brewing amongst us. So there's that. And then, all right, we're tuning into all the mentors, you know, so it's not just us humans, you know, it's everything in our lives, every chapter of our lives, that of things that we've ever done that are kind of reporting in now, going, right. And in keeping with that, mentors and mentors who introduce us to mentors. So Richard, do you need a little time to set up Merlin's video?
Like a minute.
A minute. All right. I'll tap dance. All right. Feel free to chat. We have, well, I'll tell you about Merlin Sheldrake. So Merlin Sheldrake, Rupert's son, but Merlin and Cosmo are brothers, the sons of Rupert. And they really do, they can pull those names off. And they are buddies. They are dauntingly cultivated. I would hang out with them on Cortez Island. Just, I was intimidated by their erudition. They were 19 and 20 when I first met them, like play musical instruments, science geniuses, you know, and now wonderfully influential. They are true cultivated science mystic wizards for real. And so this is Merlin's, one of his recent videos on mycelia. And this is part of our history. You know, we're still in the Sun and Cancer, New Moon and Cancer behind us. It said that, you know, history is the womb of time, right? So the sign Cancer is also associated with history, our personal history, you know, and our collective cultural history and our biological history. And that's part of, as we explore the planets and how they live in us and connect us to these forces in the outer world, you know, whatever I was about to say, it's gone. Anyway, it'll come back around. But is the video available, Richard?
We are ready.
We're ready. Okay, so here is Merlin Sheldrake's latest offering to us. Extremely pertinent. Here we go.
Before plants, land was scorched and desolate. Conditions were extreme. The ancestors of land plants were freshwater algae with no roots and with no experience foraging for nutrients and water from the ground. To survive in this new and inhospitable environment, they had to strike up relationships with another type of organism entirely. Fungi. Fungi are largely invisible ecosystem engineers which live as networks of tubular cells called mycelium. Mycelial networks have no fixed shape. By remodeling themselves, they can expertly forage for nutrients and water from their surroundings. In their relationship, both partners were able to provide something the other could not. Plants turn sunlight and carbon dioxide from the atmosphere into energy-rich carbon compounds, like sugars, which fungi needed to grow and survive. By partnering with plants, fungi acquired privileged access to these sources of energy. They got fed. In turn, fungi grew into exploratory networks that could forage for minerals and water from the ground. By partnering with fungi, plants gained greater access to these essential resources. They, too, got fed. As plants and fungi became more dependent on one another, plants evolved coarse, fleshy organs to house their fungal partners. By the time the first roots evolved, the relationship between plants and fungi was already tens of millions of years old. Fueled by high levels of light and carbon dioxide, plants spread across the world and evolved larger and more complex forms. As plants boomed, the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere dropped by 90%, triggering a period of global cooling. These alliances evolved into what we now call mycorrhizal relationships. Today, more than 90% of all plant species depend on mycorrhizal fungi. Globally, the total length of mycorrhizal mycelium in the top 10 centimeters of soil is around half the width of our galaxy. The intimate associations between plants and fungi form an ancient life support system that easily qualifies as one of the wonders of the living world. In their exchange of energy and nutrients, plants and fungi engage in sophisticated trading strategies, striking compromises and resolving dizzyingly complex trade-offs. The influence of these quadrillions of microscopic trading decisions spills out over whole continents. Mycorrhizal mycelium is a sticky living seam that holds soil together. Remove the fungi, and the ground washes away. The carbon that floods into the soil through fungal channels supports intricate food webs. About 25% of the planet's species live underground. We are destroying the planet's fungal networks at an alarming rate through activities like industrial agriculture and deforestation. When we do so, we jeopardize the health and resilience of the ecosystems on which we depend. Organizations like SPUN and the Fungi Foundation are leading a massive global sampling effort to create open access maps of the planet's mycorrhizal fungal communities. These maps will support conservation projects and policies that aim to halt their destruction. Mycorrhizal fungal networks have sustained and enriched life on our planet. It's time they received the protection they deserve.
That's pretty great in 10 million ways. And as we tap into that, you know, so much, you know, about mutual aid, right? Our the dream we want to bring alive that we have endogenous receptors for in our endogenous wonderful word, right? It means we have receptors for DMT or receptors for cannabis, or we have receptors for mythology, endogenous, or receptors for biological narration that Merlin just offered us about, you know, partnerships for reciprocal blessing. That, you know, and you know, may all of our engagements be make a well for you and for you, mutual aid, Prince Kropotkin's offering, you know, many wonderful radio guests. Kristen Olson wrote a book on, you know, Sweet and Tooth and Claw, about the many, many just incredibly beautiful, poignant, fabulous examples in nature of partnership and reciprocal blessing and ingenuity and like, whoa. And then we get into the whole physics of the origins of consciousness and everything. And just as a little foot, and we can send you my Neptune chapter from book, but when we go all the way back, the Kabbalists said, well, if the divine is everything, how does the divine create using nothing outside itself, since it's everything? And they said, well, by analogy, how do we create using nothing outside ourselves? And they go, in our imagination. Right? So our imagination is the divine part of us that participates in dreaming the world into being, right? And that's part of our play field. But so much, in Merlin's, video presentation and all the way millions of years up until now. And what are we doing? This rogue species at the very, just here for like 2 seconds, but destroying it all. So we keep in mind always the larger crisis and the very real danger. Pluto, part of all of us, wants us to acknowledge danger, but as an incentive to ingenuity. Oh, that's great. And Suzanne says, Sandra says, here, beautiful. Here, wahaha. Here. Right. And Suzanne says, may the mythical science teacher manifestation of me please play this to all high school classes they have. Yes. We want to be influential, and everybody according to their dedication. Part of why we gather, and it's very beautiful, each person with their unique skills and in a wonderful way here, our inner dedication magnetizes synchronous opportunity. So that's a great vision, Suzanne. Yeah, moving, deep, serious, beautiful, inspiring, right? Says Aaron, wonderful. Sandra says, ancient Sufism. Oh, we have some great things there. Imagination is the creative force arising from the heart, which expresses itself in images. Yes. And perhaps you know the fantastic movie, Bab Aziz, The Prince Who Contemplated His Soul. We'll bring that into play. We'll put together so many fun resources, the best soundtrack in the world. It was put together, international group of Sufis. It's in Farsi, it's in Persian. It's so beautiful. But it starts off with a blind grandfather and his granddaughter in the desert. And she says, grandfather, are we lost? And he says, those with dedicated hearts are never lost, my child. And it's like, this is going to be a great movie. And it is. And every piece of music in that movie is just full of Neptunian yearning and beauty. And the yearning of fantastic Sufi Middle Eastern music is like, it's grief, but grief has love and kinship. We are all together in this thing. So yes, thank you, Sandra. Richard Kristen Olsen, author of The Soil Will Save Us, as well as Sweet and Tooth and Claw. Yes. Mutual aid. humbly, cooperating partners, and it's trading for reciprocal benefit. And also I forgot, I couldn't quite catch the number. I think he said 55% of the species on Earth are underground, invisible, right? Most of reality invisible. That's also when we talk about the Gemini Pisces disaster and considering of the Titanic and the Titan and the migrants and the thing, it's like nothing is sudden. It's only sudden if you're not listening. If you're not paying attention to what is invisible, because we can feel it, and we want to sharpen or honor those senses, and full of respect. Another great word, respect. It means to look again, spect, look. Aretha, respect. Look again, listen again, look again, look again. So yes, and then So it's only sudden if we're not listening. In those disasters that we delineated, people weren't listening. The Greek Well, the Greek National Guard, whatever, the sea people, but they were cruel, mistaken, but also not listening to the migrants, all of that. And we go, all right, Solway and Coagula, what would be a better vision? You know, I love when, well, I don't love when George Zimmerman shot and killed Tremaine, name will come back. The Episcopalian minister in Florida said, I want to live in a world where George Zimmerman stopped and offered Tremaine a ride home in the rain. We want to revision. Part of our great resources is the fantastic Bunny Planet books, children's books, so wonderful. Many of you may know them. I think Aaron first turned me on to them decades ago. They're short, they're wonderful, they're children's books for all of us. Far beyond the earth and stars, 20 light years south of Mars, spins the gentle bunny planet, and the bunny queen is Janet. Come in, she says, for here's the day that should have been. So beautiful. It's a wonderful little child animal. They're so beautifully drawn. My favorite's the island lighthouse. And he's had a terrible day at school. You know, got sick and got a shot, and Terrell came home and his dad didn't say goodnight to him. And he goes, and then just as he's going off to sleep, he goes off to the bunny planet and they redo the whole day in rhyme as it should have been. And I read it on the air one day, for here's the news that should have been, right? So the bunny planet is part of our sacred texts, right? And I read part of it on the air, and my wonderful, grumpy, dour station manager at the time, Jim Bennett, said, oh, those are my favorite books. And I was having such a hard time today that I brought them in. And then you read them, right? And it's like, oh, that's so darling. That's so darling. For here's the day that should have been. For here's the news that should have been. And see, all the physics and the novel I'm reading and the interesting TV series, Nine Perfect Strangers, and it's all around. It's like, well, how can we redo things? And physics is kind of backing that up, that these are beyond my domain of certainty, or, you know, or sufficient knowledge, but it's like, but it is speculative in the collective field that we can create realities, desirable realities that are as molecularly real. That's what the Kabbalists said. They said an image in our mind, and it's also clears it up when it said we are made in the image of God or the image of the divine. It doesn't mean like old white guys with beards. It means we are dreamed up by the creative imagination of the divine, and our part of dreaming things up is the divine part of us responsible for mutual aid and, you know, collaborate, you know, a better dream than what's going on here. Thank you, Trayvon Martin. Thank you very much. I'm reading, oh, Jenny Odell, How to Do Nothing. Oh, that's so great, Doc. Yes, because that's her book on time that came out. And then I immediately, her publisher sent me a pitch, right? And I was like, oh, yeah, no, absolutely. You know, I love what this woman's saying and about time and, you know, and how timely it is because Saturn is just stationing now. That apparently was enough for the publisher to go, never mind, anyway. So, but according to the Chiron myth, I will not take it personally to be underestimated. You know, perhaps you don't know who, anyway, but yes, thank you for reading that. Sure, it's a lot about imagination and how to resist the attention economy. Right, exactly. And time, Neptune, time, Saturn is in Pisces. Sylvia says it's the escape artist in the timekeeper's box kind of a thing, but many kinds of time, right? And time subject to imagination. And that's part of our realm of play. Do we have enough time? You know, and the planets say, well, are you talking about realistic tick time? No, we don't have enough realistic tick time to answer our emails or do anything or whatever. But Neptune time, dream time, in Chinese fairy tales, it's called irrational time, where you step through the tree trunk into the fairy world, and you spend a long time there, you know, timeless amount of time, and you come back 5 minutes, right? So that kind of time You know, and these are all, you know, speculative, imaginative, fairy tale, mythic realms to explore. Oh, Aaron, you're so quick. Bab Aziz, the prince who contemplated his soul. And there's the fantastic YouTube for it. That's really great. Like, great. That's right. And we will copy the chat and make sure everybody has that. That's so wonderful. And what Terence was reminding, not Terence, what Merlin was reminding me also of Terence McKenna, a quirky kind of a buddy. But you know, Irish, we are kin. Our moons are the same degree, Terence and I. But a gifted storyteller. And I remember him saying, think and feel when life first emerges from the ocean, you know, and feels the pull of gravitational weight of the earth. And life goes, whoa, can we do this? And Terence said, life always responds, you betcha. Right. So I like that. So we're putting that in our magic backpacks, in our vessels that we're crafting and in which we're going to set sail as well. So yeah, that's great chatting. So anybody want to say a thing or comment or thank goodness we've thrown complaining into the cauldron. That's good. But discerning, playfulness out. There we go. More of this or that. So I like that we're crafting. We're sealing our leaky boats. And just for us all to say, you know, it's Robert Bly's, my buddy, who did many great things. You know, terrible things and then many great things, you know. But the line from his one of his last poems, right? And I only remember, you know, part of it, so I apologize, Robert. But he says, no, we're receiving so much support, so much grace is given to us for keeping our small boats afloat when so many have gone down in the storm. It's like, right. Yeah. So many have gone down in the storm. So we are connected. And then we wonder these mysteries, certainly in the physics, metaphysics realm, death. I have no certainty. You know, I do have synchronicities, right? And I know people who are certain, right? And I root for that, you know, but the culture is very interested in that, in a maturation, you know, of the invisible, the mystery worlds, the worlds that were always sacred in antiquity, death, sex, money, power, sacred things, degraded into the modern world, into taboo. So our heretic selves are, provoked. We must check out the taboo, you know, and it's not everybody, but just, you know, to ask ourselves this question, like if somebody had said to us as a child, whatever you do, don't open that door. Would we? You know, it's, I mean, it's different. It's different for everybody, but it's like, ooh, okay. But more important for us now is insourcing our authority, right? That's what all the disasters, the hugest airplane disaster in the world in Tenerife, the Canary Islands, we have it on audio, and it's foggy, and it's these double-decker planes. And it's the captain and the co-pilot, right? And the captain says, we haven't gotten the go-ahead, but I bet it's clear. And the co-pilot says, I don't know. I think we should wait. Oh, come on. Oh, okay. So anyway, so these are micro things, but I want to bring up, Terry raised her hand. Terry. Oh, yes. Yeah, absolutely. No, she's waving it away. She's what? She's waving her actual hand.
So I have the sun and the moon in the eighth house. Thank you for talking about all those taboo things.
Yes.
And my moon's at 29 degrees of Pisces. So let's just die. But actually the reason I wanted to speak is I am one of those people that never watches the news ever.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out my mother's friend told me that he runs a cable show and WGN was doing a show on him last night. And I turned on the news at 9 o'clock and they just kept showing mass shootings, a 5-year-old who got killed by her grandchild. And after 20 minutes, I had to turn it off. So that's what called me to be here tonight, so that I could participate with you and this group to dream the news that I want to see. And part of me is going, but what's real?
Good question. Right. I mean, you know, Carl Jung, born with the sun square Neptune, a lifelong, what's real? Power of symbols and dreams, what's real? You know, I am going to dust off memories, dreams, and reflections. Just his, that was the first thing I read of his as a tiny little person, little 14-year-old person going, this is the smart guy. So what is real? Well, we wonder. See, that, I mean, that's the Neptunian thing, to bring us to our knees and go, look, all these people have run out of certainty. An ancestral round of applause. That's very fantastic. Now mystery can find them. Very wonderful. We just get, you know, certainty was always a booby prize. Right. Well, yes. The eighth house thing. But I also include telepathically, you know, a client, ally, friend, Linda Francis, who before she retired was a tough gig. She was a forensic psychiatrist. Her job was to go into crime scenes and maintain curiosity and kinship with the perpetrator. It's like, and I really respect what she does and what she did and the way in which she did it, because what we discerned is there is no private crime. It's all a collective dream. And that's how she understood it when she ran into, you know, crime scene, which children had killed their mother. She's like, we're killing our mother. Right. That a wise culture would understand a horrific thing, which they did in Bali. When the terrorist bombings happened in Bali, the Bali national psyche said, it's not a blaming the victim thing. They go, what in us has been complicit with this horror? Let us wonder and dissolve whatever that was so that we can come back into harmonious kinship. And so what Linda does is, and it's also about mythological literacy, and you know, and our collective tendency is like, you know, well, what you brought up, it is. I mean, the world's on fire, and the cruelty is out of control, and the guns and boom, boom. It's, you know, we want to dissolve that. We want to, you know, many friends have made, you know, beautiful jewelry out of machine gun bullets and the thing. Swords into plowshares, all of that. But she also, she was called in the Virginia Tech shooting, and she had the journals of the young man, and she shared those with me. And so he was an isolated Korean Christian, so no therapy. And part of the mythological news is Korea, you know, degraded Mongolian shamanism rolls into Korea, you know, and is suppressed, right? It's this theme of what you're not listening to becomes demonic. It's only demonic when it's on the other side of the door, when it's suppressed, and the volatility and explosiveness is in direct proportion to the force of its exclusion. So Mongolian degraded shamanism monsters rolls into Korea. Christian, whatever it is, suppresses that. It's in this young man. He's drawing these Mongolian monsters, but he thinks his fellow students are the monsters, right? So it's like, oh, but no one could find him, right? Because we don't have many therapists yet who are mythologically literate going, you know, lad, there's a mythology. It's a mythology, not a literal thing. Here, it's a dream. How can you be the hero to the, no, don't kill the students. And it is part of also the mystery that we're addressing of so much screen time with some, you know, psychoactive antidepressant Adderall things that so many youth are dosed with. You know, and this gets into the, you know, the things that some candidates are disparaged for, but there's a little grain of truth in every con. And I did ask Carl Prebrum, consort of a great friend of Aaron's and mine, Catherine Neville, when he was one of the great brain experts in the world. I go, Carl, I don't have science, but I do study school shootings, right? And I just know there's something about, you know, a family of suppression. Very often there's a legally sanctioned killer in the family who's, you know, Fort Detrick making nerve gas, you know, but it's, you know, psychotropic antidepressants and screen time that dissolves the barrier and makes it crude. And Carl said, that's exactly right. So we go, And see, for lack of a guiding mythology, we have the toxic mimic of celebrity culture and all of these, we have these receptors, right? And what you're saying, yeah, Teresa, exactly right. So it's not that anybody needs to watch the news. I do it for you, but so do a number of people, because it's sort of my beat. But in this context, going, what is trying, the solution is in the problem in some way. Let's dream it. Let's wonder about it. Let's, you know. And also, I just wanted to bring up, you know, everything good is also our dream, you know. So there was, you know, Pennsylvania Governor Shapiro on the news, right? Because there was the truck that burst into flames on I-95 outside of Philadelphia, which is a major commuting thing. And it was just destroyed. One life was lost. It was the trucker whose truck, but everybody else was kept safe. But the whole thing collapsed. And engineers looked at that going, oh man, you know, this is complete collapse. It's going to take 3 months to repair that. They did it in 12 days, right? And he was so great because he said, it was through ingenuity, cooperation, and everybody talented on the team had autonomy to make their own decisions. And that's how we did it in 12 days. And so we go, all right, we dreamed. The governor of Pennsylvania, Shapiro, part of ourselves, did a miraculous, heroic, Chiron-like thing of repairing an impossible, necessary pipeline in 12 days rather than 3 months by constellating a team of people who were collaborative, who were like fungi. They were as collaborative as fungi. That's the thing, right? And we know the stories that, you know, Stamets has told about how slime mold designed the Tokyo subway and stuff. I mean, are we humble enough to cooperate with slime mold and fungi? So yeah, so the Governor Shapiro of Pennsylvania, part of ourselves, put together a fungal team, part of ourselves, of ingenuity and cooperation and autonomy, and it did a miracle. There we go. That's what we're taking out with us tonight, you know, just that thing. So yeah, so thank you, you great ally for so long. It's wonder, there are so many cool people here. It really is, this wanted to happen. And I don't know if you caught it, but when the Titanic went down, the Midheaven was 26 Scorpio. And when we convene tonight, the Midheaven was 26 Scorpio. We go, ooh, it doesn't mean we're the Titanic. It means we're the considering of what they didn't consider, and therefore it was a disaster. 26 Scorpio rising is what was rising in Occupy Wall Street and stuff, but it's powerful people marching through the street in a rallying, not violent, in a collaborative fungal like way. That's the image for that degree. So that's great. So we have something to ride out on, and so we can imagine getting in our vessels. But oh yeah, and Richard says yes, fungal team. That's great, Terry. Intend to build or constellate or whatever it is, a fungal team, right? And Richard Badger says, slime mold, when cut, does not lose communication with its parts. Right, physics. Now we're in physics. When physics and metaphysics get married, they can have a child, which is reverent science, as though life mattered. Yes, I know you are the collaborative attorney. Your middle name is collaborative mycelial cahoots. That's so great. Yes. Wonderful. Well, does anybody else want to chime in? Otherwise, we're going to get in our vessels. Feel free to raise your hand or to chat or anything. That's right. And Well, we'll address the issues of mold at some point, right? Because so many people I know, I'm looking at your wonderful self, Judy, you know, and then my kitchen has had, you know, unremediated, well, I'm used to it, but mold. And then somebody else had to move out of their house. And it is an interesting issue. Like, what does it want? You know, and how do we, but that's for our adventures unfolding before us. But in the coming week, just think of what is a kerfuffle in one's own life, as though it were a dream. Feel free to present it to the council. You can also communicate during the week, you know, and what story magnetizes one, you know, how about those orcas, right? The orcas, right? It's a very Bodhi thing, right? And the story comes out. So an orca matriarch, and remember the orca matriarchs run everything, right? Because that was two summers ago, I think, that marine biologists said, what possible use could postmenopausal mammals be? And then they studied the orcas, and they're like, everything. The orca grandmother leads a couple feet out or a couple miles out. And what they found was her existence improved the thriving of her children and her grandchildren, even if they no longer knew her, just her being there. So it was an orca grandmother that was injured by a yacht rudder. And she figured out how to disable future yacht rudders and then taught other orcas how to do it. They just rammed the rudder, leaving the boat rudderless, right? And letting the humans escape in their little boats, you know, that was okay. And then apparently it's spreading, right? Teaching other whales, going, just knock that thing out, you know, only the billionaire boats. Right. And then there's a sea otter in Santa Cruz. I want them all to be safe. I want them all to be safe from human bad manners. There's a sea otter in Santa Cruz who is stealing surfboards. And keeping surfers away. And it's like, otters, orcas, otters, and we haven't even gotten to the peas yet, porpoises and reptiles. And marine biologists, right, mythology, biology, science, you know, is very mythic, saying we're seeing a collective defense response from marine mammals. We go, we're rooting for that, you know, and otters too. So there, safety for sea otters. Yes, safety for sea otters. I want that. Don't kidnap that sea otter. He's performing performing a valuable function in Santa Cruz, going, too many surfers. I think that's witty and wonderful. We're delving into the deep sea, the unconscious by the myth of the old gods. Yes, yes, yes. With a collaborative attorney, part of ourselves. And, you know, deep diving and all of those things. So, yes, and the call off your old tired ethics. So, all right, team. Well, good enough for mythological work, right? So we have our sallying forth, our outro, which is rousing. And if you feel self-conscious, turn off your camera. But really, I'm more self-conscious because usually it's just me and the little thing. I can't see anybody else. But it's very rousing. And so let's imagine that we have stirred our vessel, we have our individual vessels, and then the vessel that we're forming of all of us, and we will get to, you know, be as present as we want to in ensuing weeks. And then we're going to get in our vessels and set sail with dreams of mutual aid and humbly cooperating with nature's guiding genius. There we go. Okay, Backstage Badger, let's let the outro Wellerman rousing live performance unfurl.
There once was a ship that put to sea. The name of the ship was the Belly of Tea. The winds blew up her bird up down up below my bully boys blow.
Soon may the Wellerman come to bring us sugar and tea and rum. One day when the tonguing is done, we'll take our leave and go.
She'd not been 2 weeks from shore when down on her a right whale bore. The captain caught her hands and swore he'd take that whale in tow.
Soon may the Wellerman come to bring us sugar and tea.
Thank you, team. Thank you, team. Setting.